Hello, this is Michael Jones for the Unfair Housing Oral History Project being done by the Metropolitan Housing Coalition and the University of Louisville Oral History Center. It is December 28th at 5:16, and I'm here with Shay Rhodes, who is a professor at the University of Louisville. So, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
All right. So you know, we've been looking at talking to people who have faced some kind of discrimination or problem with housing. And I was told that you had a problem when you tried to purchase a house. What year was this?
What was that? What year is that? That would have been, well, the whole process would have been 2004, the fall of 2004. And then I moved in 2005 in January. So I think I took possession like right after Christmas or right before Christmas in 2004.
So is this when you were first coming to Louisville?
Yeah, so I was teaching at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. I've been there for 5.5 years. And then was essentially offered a job at U of L. And it was a little bit odd because it happened, typically, you know, hires tend to happen in the fall. So you're hired in the spring and then you start in the fall. But just, I guess it was the timing of when the position, oh no, I take that back. You don't need all these details, but the job offer kind of happened not in the most sort of conventional of ways. Mm-hmm. So it kind of bubbled up instead of, I mean, there was a search and everything and it was a normal thing, but it all kind of started not a conventional way. And I was a little late to the game in some ways. And just because of circumstances, it ended up that I didn't want to leave. I would have had to have left my position at my other job kind of abruptly. And I didn't want to leave, you know, my department kind of in the lurch. So I basically said, you know, I'd be interested in this job, but I'd have to delay a semester to start just because, you know, I wouldn't want to just leave in a hurry. So they were agreeable with that. So that's why I was in that sort of timing. Mm-hmm. So I moved here from Southern Illinois.
And where are you from originally?
I was born in Cincinnati. Lived kind of all over. I went to actually boarding school in Rhode Island as a minority scholarship student. And then I went to college at Center College here in Kentucky. Left Kentucky, swore I'd never come back, but came back a lot. And went to grad school in Philadelphia, and then ended up getting a job in Carbondale. And then my mother's side of the family is they're all in New York. So we spent a lot of time kind of back and forth between Cincinnati and New York growing up.
Mm-hmm. So why'd you say you'd never come back to Kentucky?
I just did not like it at all. I was probably a little more accustomed to, I mean, Cincinnati's the Midwest bordering on the South, but, it's definitely more metropolitan than Kentucky, even Louisville, I would say, for sure. But then, you know, I spent a lot of time on the East Coast growing up, and then in high school as well. And I think my experience at Center College was it was very interesting at first, you know, just sort of culturally. And then I just sort of grew kind of tired of, you know, it was just a very conservative, or I shouldn't say very, it was a pretty conservative place. And then just, you know, all of the, just wasn't my speed, I think, the sort of culturally at that time here in Kentucky. And then also, you know, the culture there of Center. I had a really great experience at Center, all in all, largely because of my experience with Stephen Powell, my professor, in the art department. You know, without that, I would have definitely been gone. But I came back to see him all the time, you know, so I kind of ended up, yeah, just wasn't my speed. And, you know, it was a pretty weird experience. And I'm a pretty, you know, adaptable person, but 4 or 5 years, you know, there just was a long time for me, I think. Yeah.
All right. So when you moved to Louisville in 2004 and you started looking for a place to live, where were you looking?
Well, so I moved in 2005, but I was in Illinois still and looking because I was teaching that fall in Carbondale, and I was to start here. And I was to start in Louisville, you know, in the spring, in January, what we call the spring, obviously, in university. So I guess I did, you're right, I did move here in the very last days of 2004. Well, where I was looking, it was interesting. I started looking online, obviously, and I made a few trips to Louisville and kind of drove around and saw some things, you know, listed. I fell in relatively quickly with a pretty wonderful realtor, real estate agent. And what I said to her was, I don't care where I live. Like, I don't care what part of town it is or what, you know, I want it to be close and convenient, but in terms of demographics or, you know, socioeconomic status or even, you know, just the sort of geography, I didn't really care. I just said, I just want to get the type of space that I'm looking for an affordable amount of money. So basically, I know a lot of people are like targeting areas. I didn't care what the area was. But in terms of affordability, you know, most of what came up was in the West End. So, you know, there was a lot of the West End and also downtown and sort of what's now like Smoketown and Shelby Park and those kinds of areas were coming a little bit in Germantown at the time as well. But I wasn't intentionally looking in any area, but it did end up pretty quickly. I figured out the West End is, I thought it was beautiful. You know, the architecture is beautiful. It's conveniently located downtown and, you know, exceptionally affordable at the time. And, you know, contextually, that was 2004. And this is like, you know, the height of the housing bubble. And, you know, a little bit before the housing crisis, you know, the collapse, the mortgage crisis. And so, you know, from my perspective, I didn't really care about the investment sort of component of things. But, you know, as an outsider and not knowing, you know, what Louisville is really like. I mean, I had experience in Louisville. I'd been here plenty of times and had gone to Center College, but I didn't really understand what it was like here. You know, I was looking at the West End, you know, particularly the area where I am now, which is, you know, in the vicinity of 20th and Main. And I was like, oh, well, if, you know, the economy, if housing keeps going the way that it is, this is all going to kind of be flourishing in, you know, some manner of time or matter of time. And, you know, as I began to try to acquire property in the West End, I began to figure out that, oh, that's not how, they're not going to let that happen. You know, I don't think in this town, but I ended up kind of targeting the West End. And the realtor I had, she was, you know, she was really great. She was more accustomed to, I think, looking at properties with people who were looking, you know, for nice, you know, I'd say upper middle class or even upper class sort of properties around Louisville. So a lot of things in, you know, in subdivisions and some things. And at the time, the condos downtown were like the new big thing. And so it was really interesting because she's a wonderful person. More recently, I kind of figured out that in some ways she's a lot more conservative than I am, which maybe I'm not a good barometer, but she has a very sort of strong sense of right and wrong, you know? So when I say she's more conservative than I am, I don't mean in the way that we maybe refer to people as conservative in 2020, but maybe like more how you would have in like, I don't know, 2000 or, you know, 1995. But you know, she's, I'd say she's a progressive person, but just politically, I think she's probably a little more conservative than I am. But, you know, so looking at dilapidated properties in the West End was definitely pretty far outside of her area of expertise. And I think that 99% of other realtors would have just been like, I'll see you later. This isn't my thing. But, and you know, she didn't stand to make a lot of money off of anything I did because the properties were, you know, very low value, I would say, from at least from her perspective. But she just was like a good person and, you know, sort of helped to kind of steward me through the whole process. And, you know, it was awesome because we were, you know, I'm used to dilapidated properties and doing maintenance and things, but, you know, we went into buildings that were really unsafe, you know, at times. We went in one building, and there was a gas main was just open. We walked in, you know, I work with natural gas a lot. So as soon as we walked in, I was like, this building has a huge gas leak. And I told her to get out. And I just went in quickly and looked to see if we could see where it was to tell the fire department. And, you know, I saw it was just an open gas valve, just wide open. And, you know, we just got out of there and called the fire department. But she was a trooper, I have to say. And then when I had a lot of trouble buying property in the West End, and she really was like ready to go to war with the powers that be, because, you know, neither of us could believe what was happening. Like, we really were both just 100% taken aback at what was happening. She was ready to go to battle, which I thought was, mm-hmm. you know, was awesome.
So what was the problem with you buying property?
So, I mean, I'll try not to make this too long for you. So I was doing this remotely from Illinois, and I had never bought property before. I was 30 or 31 at the time. And, you know, I work in the arts. I wanted to have a place where I could, I mean, I had a little bit of a vision of the type of structure I wanted to live in or whatever, but I was pretty adaptable, but I had kind of a vision of what I was interested in, which would be a place where I could have kind of an art studio workspace and then also a living space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are the type of properties that we were looking at, you know, that border more on the like sort of office or commercial type of style. I live in a brick storefront building, as you can probably tell. What ended up happening is I first, you know, this was back when you're literally dogs were getting loans. Like literally people were trying to see if, you know, because they're giving loans to so many people. People were trying to see if they could get
the subprime.
It was the subprime.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting because, you know, I think I'm a, you know, at least, you know, a reasonably intelligent person. And the first thing I did was went and got pre-approved just through like a pre-approval service. I wish I had more time. I was just looking through old papers that I haven't looked at in 15 years to try to see if there was any info I could dig up for you. But I got pre-approved for what seemed to me to be way more money than I could afford. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, we talk about the victims of the house, the subprime mortgage crisis. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, why did these people take these loans that they knew they couldn't afford? Well, I knew I couldn't afford what they were telling me, But from my perspective, I was like, well, I don't know. This person sitting across the desk from me is a loan officer. And if they tell me that I can afford this, I suppose I can. I can see where people fell into that. I, you know, fortunately didn't. I was like, well, I don't think I can afford that, but you know, I'm going to stay well below that regardless. Mm-hmm. But I see how people fell victim to that, because you have bankers telling you that you can afford things. And it's easy to talk somebody into that if you're a quote unquote expert. But so anyway, I got pre-approved, which was supposed to make it easier, you know, to get loans either through banks or just to initiate the whole process. And then I actually spoke with my mother in Cincinnati, and she had a friend. I'm going to try not to name any like institutions, just because I don't know, the litigiousness is of any of this stuff. But she had a friend that was high up in a bank in Cincinnati that also operated branches here in Louisville. And she was like, talk to my friend at this bank. And, you know, and so that's how I started the process. And I thought I had an in, actually. You know, I was like, okay, this is going to be good. And I found this particular property, and it's a storefront, and it's zoned, I think OR1 or OCR, which is like, basically you can, it's office and commercial and residential. You can kind of do whatever you want with it. It was three apartments and a storefront before I had it, but it was essentially an abandoned-ish building. I mean, people had been living there months before, but it was, you know. And so anyway, I found this property and went through the whole rigmarole with the bank and starting the whole loan process and had the pre-approval letter and everything else. And the, you know, the price was well below what I was approved for. And I was coming into a tenure track position at U of L. I was making, you know, decent money for someone my age and very stable job, right? A tenured, you know, likely to be a tenured position. And so that first bank, you know, we're doing all this remote, or I was doing it remotely, went through the whole process of, you know, all of the paperwork and, you know, letters, you know, your offer letter and all that stuff. And we were supposed to close on a Monday. So I was supposed to drive here on Monday and do the closing from Illinois, which is about 3.5 hours. And on Friday at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon or 3:30, I get a phone call or phone message that they don't want to do the closing anymore. Like, we're not doing it. So this is like after everything's been, you know, everything's done except for the closing. And I can't, you know, really get through to anybody because they called me on Friday before Monday. So the bank is obviously closed on the weekend, or those offices are. And I guess I got a hold of them on Monday, and they said, well, we aren't going to do it because they sent their drive-by appraiser by. And what their story was is that the property looked too commercial, is what they said. And was like, so this was, you know, and this loan was under $100,000 was, you know, the value of the loan I was looking for. So, you know, they claimed that the property just looked more commercial than they realized, and they were trying to do a residential loan, but the zoning, it all fits. It was all legit. And I was like, that is weird. And we also sat there and looked at photographs of the property together, and also in the packet of all the, you know, the info with the appraisal and like all of the info, the real estate listing, are photographs of the prop. I mean, it was a cover story. And I was like, that seems super fishy. I was pretty upset, but moved on to the next bank. And just coincidentally, this bank was very interesting. I had actually met a pretty high up official at this bank on a trip to Louisville months before this. I can't remember if I was, you know, had already taken the job here or not at that time, but I'd met just, you know, through coincidence, someone at this bank. And actually you know, kind of got to know them a little bit. And I was like, well, I'll try this bank. And that bank did the same thing. We got within, I think it was 4 days of closing, and they reneged after everything was, you know, done. I was pretty upset. I, you know, got that person on the phone, and this one just really burns me up. But they told me, I mean, they said a lot of illegal things to me on the phone. They said, you know, we aren't going to give you a loan on a property in that area. That's literally what they said. And then, you know, we argued. I mean, I was pretty heated, actually. Then at one point they said, we'll loan you $10,000. You know, and I was like, well, if I need a $10,000 loan, I don't need a loan. You know what I mean? Like, that's not really a whatever. They basically said, they said to me that it was the neighborhood. And, you know, but ironically,
did they know the neighborhood before when they
had what now?
Would they have known the neighborhood when they started the loan?
Well, this is what was interesting to me, and I began to figure out in this process. And I learned in my early days living in Louisville. I think you've been here all your life or a long time?
All my life.
Yeah. It has certainly changed here, but you know, I work at First and Main, and I used to work at Ninth and Market. Mm-hmm. And you know the whole thing. It's not the way it used to be, but up until just a handful of years ago, it was like, don't cross 9th Street. Mm-hmm. And I would say to people, they say, where do you live? And I'd say 20th and Main. And they don't have any concept of where that is actually. So I think all the people, the officials at the banks, they knew the address, 2000 West Main. I guess probably shouldn't say my address. I don't know if we can edit that out, but they knew the address, but I think it didn't register with them where it was. Okay. You know, like just sort of what neighborhood, because the exact same thing happened with that particular bank. They said our drive-by appraiser went by, and they just kind of didn't know enough to not say that, you know. And you know, they said we just won't give you a loan there. That, I guess that was, maybe that wasn't the second bank. I'd have to look at the sort of sequence of events, but I went through, in my mind, it's six banks, but I think it was five banks. Same thing every time, almost after the drive-by. And I think what was happening is when they send the drive-by appraiser out, he drives down into the West End and is all of a sudden like some person probably not from the West End who realizes that they're actually about to go look at a property in the West End. And at that time, people weren't really buying property down here. And they probably, I can only imagine, as soon as they crossed 9th Street, they were probably like, whoa, do you know where this property is? You know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's all I can think because, well, like I said, that particular bank actually told me, you know, what was going on. Maybe that wasn't the second bank, that one. That's right. It wasn't the second one. I have to look at my paperwork. Somewhere in between there, I was counting today. There were four banks, and I can't remember what the fifth bank was off the top of my head. I'll have to look. But I was counting the four banks that I distinctly remember this whole thing happening with. And I called a friend of mine whose family is big in banking, and because I went to Center College, so I know a lot of people in Louisville. And I called a friend of mine whose family was big in banking and real estate. And he said his uncle called me back a couple of days later, and he said, well, I talked to my uncle, and he said, you know, I was like, why am I having all these problems? I don't get it. Like, this is a very small loan. I have a stable job, good credit, like whatever. And he goes, you know what my uncle said? He said, take that address where your friend is looking for a place and draw a big red circle around that, you know, for like a radius of 2 miles, and you're not getting a loan in that area. And it was insane because, you know, at the same time, I was, you know, they were trying to get me to I looked at other properties like in Butchertown and a couple other areas that were almost double what I, you know, would be paying here. And they were no problem. You know what I mean? So for twice the money in a different neighborhood, you know, we could sign today, but down here. So anyway, I ended up going through, I always say six banks, but it must be that the sixth bank, which I will name, which was River City Bank.
The African-American they actually did,
bank. What's that?
They're African-American bank, aren't they?
You know, they might be. I didn't know that at the time. And I feel like I've heard that. But no one I dealt with, you know, was African-American. And it was interesting because the only way I got this place was I happened to meet the previous owners. And they were an older couple that lived out in sort of the, what is that neighborhood? Off of Taylorsville, kind of between 264 and Hikes Lane. I can't think of the name of that neighborhood, but
like Beachmont or
that might be it. Yeah, I think it's Beachmont. Yeah. Like I was just out there the other day and I can't think of. Yeah, if you go under 264 on Taylorsville and then kind of go to the right or to the, I guess that would be west, then you're right. That's what. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure with that because Beachmont is off Teller Boulevard.
Yeah, that's Teller Boulevard. Yeah. This is more like between Taylorsville Road and, I guess, Bardstown Road, kind of.
Yeah, but like, closer to Seneca Park area.
That might be. I can't think of the name of it. Not too far from like Hikes Lane area, you know, but a little more east. Yeah. They lived out there. I met them and for whatever reason, they liked me. I liked them. We weren't really supposed to communicate because that's just not, you know, conventional. But ultimately, we ended up doing contract for deed. They said, we'll do a contract for deed with you for, it was 6 months or a year until you can find a loan, like after you move here. So I moved here. We did contract for deed. So I just paid them directly for some number of months. And then I had been through so many banks at that point that I was very frustrated. And someone told me to call River City Bank. Oh. And I did. And I was like, this isn't going to work out. I was like, these people are all crooked. And I remember I was doing demolition work on the property. So it was a disaster. It was a mess. And this guy came from River City Bank, probably a little younger than me, real polite, jacket and tie, you know, pretty soft-spoken. And I was like, done. You know, normally I'm like, going to try to get this loan. Hello, sir. I was like, hey, how's it going? I just was not really trying. And he came in and stood in like 3 feet of rubble and debris with me. Because in my mind, I'm like, there's no way I'm going to get this loan. And he called me back the next day and he was like, yeah, we can totally work with you. He's like, the numbers are there. He's like, yeah, there's no, you know, and I told him, I was like, I've been having a lot of trouble. What's the deal? And he said something really interesting to me. He said, look, we're in the business of banking. We're not in the business of real estate. So basically we're not trying to own your property that we think we can speculate that's going to appreciate in value. And then we can take it from you or whatever. And he's like, we just do loans. If you can afford the loan, you get the loan. If you can't, you don't, you know? And I was like, that's great. That's the way it should be. But that's not how it tends to be around here. So I got the loan, but a lot of other crazy things happened. So at one point, the bank that I, you know, had that, the sort of most sort of acrimonious, sort of antagonistic relationship with, you know, they said, well, we'll loan you $10,000 on that property because that's all it's worth in that neighborhood. And, that same day, so that fell through. And I remember that same day I was trying to get insurance on the property and it's listed at 5,000 square feet, which is, I think, kind of a mislisting. They sort of cheated on the square footage, but it's made of brick. And when I started trying to get insurance on the property, they told me that the insurance value, a couple of different companies. The first one said that I had to insure it at $775,000. And I was like, what are you talking about? I just got off the phone with a bank that won't give me a loan because they say it's only worth $10,000. And they're like, well, it's a 5,000 square foot brick building. You know, if the rebuild cost on that would be, you know, $750,000. And I was like, this is insane. So my insurance was going to be at that point, like 2.5 times my mortgage in terms of cost. You know, I'm like, this is insane. Like this system is completely, you know, just it's not right. But anyway, you know, I finally got the place after 5 banks, contract for deed, and then finally an actual loan. And my realtor, she said, she's like, we're going to go to the newspapers. Because really, like, we were so dumbstruck by all this that neither of us thought it was redlining at first. You know, like, we just, it was 2005. It's like, that doesn't happen anymore, right? And, you know, in this market at the time, it was like everything was on fire. And I was used to, I lived in Philly, where people were just buying, you know, older properties left and right. And it was, you know, it was just a thing. And she was like, all right, we're going to go to the papers. She's like, I got friends at the Courier Journal. I got friends here and there. I was like, yeah. And I happened to mention it to my boss at my employer, which is, maybe I shouldn't name them. It's, you know, pretty easy to know who they are. But a large academic institution in the city of Louisville. And my boss at the time, who I think of as being a very scrupulous person, said, yeah, no, you're not going to the papers. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, because this particular institution has a very close relationship with one of the banking institutions that you're talking about. And that's not going to fly. And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So yeah, but you know, it's fascinating. this neighborhood.
Are you considered in Russell or Portland? Cause you're kind of on the edge.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I'm right on the edge, and it really depends on, you know, who you talk to or what map you look at. Yeah. So I live on, I mean, maybe you can redact my exact address, but I live on Main Street, and some people will tell you that the border, you know, the southern border of Portland is Main Street, and others will tell you that it's Market Street. So I am, you know, literally in the border of Portland and Russell. And it is very much Portland and Russell. It's definitely the flavor of both of those neighborhoods.
Both of those are going through a revitalization now. It's totally opposite because everyone is trying to buy up everything in the neighborhood. Have you gotten offers for property?
Well, I think I have, and it's weird. I mean, I think they are, and I think they aren't, you know, and that's a whole other conversation. Like what's really happening in the West End in terms of whatever you want to call it, like evolution, gentrification, you know, development, however you look at it, positive or negative. I think like everything else in Louisville, there's sort of the story of what's happening, and then there's what's really happening. I have gotten a lot of offers, but they're these kind of generic offers. You know, I don't even know who they are. I get phone calls and text messages pretty much every day now. But they're, you know, I don't know who they are. Mostly I think that they're just some probably out of town, whoever they are. I don't really know where it's all coming from. but you know, clearly they want to try to get your property for a very low price and then do whatever they're going to do with it, slumlord it out, or I don't think they're really doing real development. You know, I think that they're just doing profitable sort of low value rentals is what I think, you know, most of it is. So it's not really
the PVA just went through and I guess changed everyone's taxes. So are whether they saying your property is worth now?
Last I checked, which was not that long ago, was really interesting. When I say not that long ago, it was within I can actually remember what I was. It was sometime probably halfway through the summer, I think. It was at the value that I purchased, for which I purchased it. Now, actually, I own this property, but I also own, a couple years later, I bought the property next door at auction for cash. Mm-hmm. And I also bought the property behind me several years after that for cash. But the PVA on this first parcel is, when I looked most recently, it was exactly where it was when I bought it 16 years ago. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that, that's fine. You know, it'll probably keep my tax value down. I do recall it having gone up at one point before. I don't remember exactly when, but it seems to be where it is now. And I have some neighbors across the street, and their daughter works, I want to say in the PVA office, but it might be another office. And she, it's interesting to hear people in the neighborhood talk. What many people think down here is, like, I have this neighbor, and they bought their house. I don't know what they bought it for, but let's say they've been there a long time. I'm going to guess they bought it for, in the neighborhood of $50,000, you know, years ago. And they've done quite a bit of work to it. It's a nice looking property. It's, you know, they've kept it up very well. They've done some additions and things. And their property value is still, like, really very low. Mm-hmm. And what they think, and many other people think, is that, I mean, they have a very sort of specific idea about sort of eminent domain and things. They seem to believe that there's a specific plan. I'm not sure that I believe anybody in any of those offices is smart enough to have that sort of, you know, nefarious of a plan. But I do think that the overall strategy is not unlikely, which is that they keep the values, the tax values, low in the areas that they want to target, so that if the city or developers want to come in and buy properties, they can get them at a good cost or a good price. So, you know, it is interesting that, and I'm not trying to alert the PVA, I don't want my taxes raised, you know, until the day before I try to sell my house. But it is interesting that in 16 years and all of this supposed, you know, interest in the West End, that, oh, the value of my property hasn't increased at all. I mean, that's sort of surprising, to say the least.
Especially when we're in a red hot real estate market again.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, right? So that all is very interesting. And, you know, I think there's what everyone says is happening down here, then there's what's really happening, and they're not congruent. And I think that, you know, that whole trying to move here was my first sort of, you know, rough lesson about Louisville. And, you know, basically, like, oh, it's that racist. Also that, you know, people, the West End is not probably ever going to, and I don't really want to get into the conversation about gentrification and whether that's good or bad, but let's just say develop, because I'd like to see people who live here just have better access to anything at all, you know, food, retail, socializing. I mean, there's nothing here. There's no jobs. There's, you know, and, you know, the city's not even educating the children of the West End, right? Bus them all the way across town to a shitty school that you built across town, so you can say that you bust the kids across town, but you're still just sending them to a shitty school, you know? And now I guess the new plan is to bring them all back to the West End. They're going to build some more shitty schools in the West End, I guess, now. And then that way they don't have to have the black kids and the poor kids, because if you're white and poor in the West End, you get pretty much the same treatment as if you're black. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now they're just going to build shitty schools in the West End so that these parents in the East End can fit more of their children in the schools that they want to fit them into. And they don't have to be around, you know, poor people and people of color. But, you know, I just didn't really realize how it was. But, you know, I don't think the West End of Louisville, at least, you know, with current trajectories and strategies, it's not going to experience a renaissance, I guess, is the way I would like to look at it, you know. And I think the reason is, it's just like probably the most racist city I've ever, you know, had experience in. And people are not, they're not gonna, the people of Louisville are generally not going to move to an area where there's this many Black people. It's just not gonna happen, you know? And then it's a strategy, right? I mean, this is a long conversation for another time, but, you know, Hunter Thompson's article like 55 years ago about Louisville, which I read in high school, never thinking I'd, you know, even go to Louisville, and then reread after I moved here, just because something told me to reread that. And then I sort of forgot that it was all about housing and, you know, the problems of race and housing in Louisville. I mean, he just nailed it. But
is this the article about the 800 building, or
it's about which building?
The 800 building.
No, right. I think it was, he might have mentioned that building there. It's called Louisville, a Southern City with Northern Problems.
Okay, yeah, that's the what I was thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think he might mention that building there, but he just talks about how you know, and this is 55 years, way before anybody's talking about, you know, the redlining and stuff. But if you, you know, just sort of look at what's happened since that article, you know, he talks about how the developers, the realtors, and the banks, you know, when especially Portland, but more of the West End was white, they started building properties in the East, which was farmlands. You know, and at that time, everybody shopped downtown and they lived, you know, close to downtown. Or, and to motivate, they couldn't motivate people to move to the suburbs because it wasn't a concept yet and there was nothing out there. So they, you know, would convince a white family to move to the suburbs, and then they would move a Black family into an all-white block in the West End and block bust. And within a year, you know, they would get rid of all those people. And the city has continued that strategy in the sense of telling people not to go west of 9th Street, not policing the West End, not educating the residents of the West End so that, you know, they, if somebody would give them the opportunity for a decent job, you know, they aren't, you know, always sort of skilled or, you know, sort of introduced or initiated into, you know, whatever that sort of field or area might be. And, you know, you create this part of town that you're just like, it's just so, you tell everybody it's so terrible that they should move as far away from that part of town as they can, which they've done for the last 70 years, 60 years or so. And, you know, now you're not going to get people to move back to this part of town. Plus, there's nothing down here. And the city's not growing. Like, so I'm not sure, you know, sure, 2003, 2004, when everything was on fire, maybe. But it's not like, I mean, it is hard to find housing in Louisville. Like, it's too expensive to live in the parts of town where most people want to live. But you're just not going to get people who grew up in the Highlands. There are some, don't get me wrong. There are some people. And I say it's not happening, but there are people who are choosing to live in the West End that aren't from the West End now. Hopefully not too much at the cost of, you know, residents who are, you know, have been here for a long time. Hopefully there's not, you know, much displacement happening, but I just, you know, I don't really see it in terms of any kind of significant renaissance, because it's just too racist and segregated of a city for that to happen. You know, it's just, I don't think it's going to happen on any sort of appreciable scale. And the other thing that's happened is, you know, for certain people, I will name a name, Gil Holland. You know, it's very interesting because we live in a polarized world now, but we live in a, I think, a city with very simplistic views. And, you know, people either love Gil Holland or they hate him. Mm-hmm. But in reality, Gil Holland is complicated, right? I mean, some of the things that he's doing are really good, and other things that he's doing might have less positive consequences, right? And I'm not sure, I don't think he is doing those things intentionally. You know what I mean? Like, anything that has a negative consequence, he seems like a good guy. I don't think that he, but most people either, they're like, he's the devil, or he's the savior, you know? And I'm like, well, there are good and bad parts of what he's been trying to do, but, and that's a whole other very complicated subject. But one thing that happened is, as soon as Gil Holland even sneezed in the direction of the West End, the papers and the media all were like, the West End is the new thing, blah, 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 blah. And what's interesting is local people almost immediately started getting priced out because, you know, I don't know how it is right now, but 10 years ago, the vast majority of property in the West End, I would say, was owned by people that didn't live in the West End, right? Their families had properties here 60, 100 years ago. You know, their grandparents lived in the West End or they owned rentals in the West End. But a lot of property in the West End historically, you know, in the latter part of the 20th century has been owned by people that don't live in the West End, or at least no longer do. And, you know, is ridiculously cheap here. And I'm like, well, if you are, you know, if you're happy to live in an area that's deprived of, you know, city services and the conveniences of other parts of town, you can get property really cheap. But as soon as, you know, all that got in the papers, people started, you know, thinking that they were sitting on gold mines. Mm-hmm. So properties that, you know, if you were down here before, I mean, you could find a building that looked vacant. You could call up the owner and, you know, you could probably get a building for $30,000, $40,000. I mean, I paid too much for my building, but I didn't pay that much. You know, I mean, I knew I probably could have gotten something like it cheaper or it cheaper, but I was in a hurry and I still was like, it still is a great value to me, even if it's not a rock bottom price. But you can't, I think it's much harder to do that now because you've got some person who lives, you know, out in J-Town that owns a couple properties in the West End. And you're like, hey, yeah, you want to buy that property. And now all of a sudden, you know, they think they're sitting on the future, right, of the city. And the price has gone up, even though, well, the prices went up, but we still don't have, you know, we don't have retail, we don't have restaurants, we don't have, you know, any of these things that you know, you would consider the sort of trappings of higher real estate prices. You know, even now, like the city does recycling every other week now, and most of the time they just don't come get our recycling. So you recycle, that means you have a month where you don't get any recycling. You know, it's interesting. So I don't think that there's ever going to be like a huge renaissance down here, but I'm a cynical person. So, you know, prove me wrong. You know, I would like for people down here to be able to, you know, own properties that they might be renting, you know, and also other people to be able to move down here. You know what I mean? If they want to find an affordable home for this to be a nice place to live for, it'd be great if there was some, you know, a little more sort of socioeconomic and cultural mixing in this town. I think it would fix a lot of things or help to fix a lot of things. But yeah, so.
So had you heard about Louisville, how segregated it was housing wise before you came?
Well, not in that way. I didn't really realize it was so segregated when I moved here. I mean, I know this sounds crazy, but in many ways, I do think that this is, I mean, I go a lot of places and I try to pay attention to what's happening, but I mean, I feel like this is one of the most segregated racist cities in the country. And we've gotten bad ratings for that, but you know, you go to the Deep South and people are, they're more accustomed to seeing Black people. You know, like whenever I go to the Deep South, I'm always like, on guard, you know what I mean? And I'm kind of the one who's actually being a little closed-minded because I'm expecting, you know, it has this stigma, but, you know, most of the time I'm sort of pleasantly surprised. And a lot of it is segregated, but even in the segregated areas, lots of times, well, at least the Black people have an economy. You know what I mean? It's like, well, that's the Black part of town. but they have stuff. You know what I mean? Like there are, they have a middle class, you know, or they have, they own property or whatever, but that, you know, we don't have that here. So to answer your question, no, I didn't really know it was so segregated. And in fact, when I first moved here, I didn't really think it was like that, you know? And I mean, I've figured out very quickly. And I remember I was at, in a relationship with somebody who, you know, had a nice house in the Highlands. And we were at a social event and I just moved here. And, you know, somebody asked me, a group of people, like, how do you like Louisville? And what I learned is what they're really asking you is to tell us how much you love it here. And I was like, not that great so far. And they were like, why not? And they were like, I said, well, number one, I mean, it's just like exceptionally segregated, you know? And I was like, I've never seen a city ignore an entire part of its, you know, population like this. This is insane. And what people in Louisville will tell you is that it's not segregated, maybe not as much these days, but until just a few years ago, they'd be like, this is very diverse, very integrated city. And it's just not. And actually, you know, a upper class white person who was actually hosting the party, which was in Cherokee Triangle, this was like in a nice house. So I had this like crowd of people around me telling me that this was like a very progressive, not segregated city. And I was like, have you been, you know, around the city? Have you paid attention to, you know, how resources are distributed? And it was really interesting because this essentially wealthy white woman like took my side in this. She kind of walked up and was like, what are you guys talking about? And she was like, no, he's right. And she pointed something out that I had at that point not really noticed or considered. And she said, and she grew up here, but she said, you know, this is one of the only cities that, I mean, a lot of cities are segregated. Like Cincinnati is also listed as being segregated, but the neighborhoods are very interspersed. Like you'll have an all white neighborhood and a couple blocks over will be an all black neighborhood. And then, you know, it's sort of mingled, but, you know, she pointed out that, well, most of the black population has been like pushed to an end or an edge of the city. And there's no reason if you don't live down there for you to go down there because they haven't put anything down there at that point, and really even still now, that would, there's no reason if you lived in the Highlands, you would ever go past 9th Street, even if you weren't scared. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was like, this is one of the only cities where you can go everywhere you need to go. You can go to school, you can go to work, you can go to the grocery store, you can go to the bar and the restaurant and never see, you know, a person who doesn't look like you or, and never drive through a neighborhood that's, you know, not as affluent as the one that you live in. And I was like, that's really interesting. I hadn't really considered the geographic divide. I'd lived in plenty of segregated places before, but the geographic divide here, they did a really good job of like kind of getting it all out of sight and then telling people not to go down there. I didn't know it was like that when I moved here, but I was surprised at people who I went to college with, Center College, which would consider itself a progressive school, and people who I, you know, grew up with, who I would consider to be, or not grew up with, but went to college with, who I would consider to be progressive and open-minded, who, when I told them I was looking for properties, you know, and it ended up being primarily in the West End after a while. I mean, I couldn't believe the things that came out of people's mouths who I knew. I was like, you know, you, even in, you know, in 2005 or four, which was, you know, much more progressive than 1970 or 80, but, you know, even back, but wasn't like 2020 or where you can't say, you know, you have to be very careful what you say. You know, the things that they said about why I should not move to the West End were shocking to me, coming especially from people who I'm like, well, these are educated, you know, liberal people that are saying pretty much unacceptable things about why I shouldn't live in the West End. So
what are some of the reasons?
Well, there was the one that everybody's heard, which is you're gonna be targeted, you're gonna get shot, you know, you like all that stuff. But one that stands out You know, and this is somebody who, you know, is an open-minded person, but they just said, and they're probably just thinking real talk. They said a lot of things, but one of the things that just really stands out, they said, you know, you aren't going to be able to talk to your neighbors because they're just not going to be, they're going to be so uneducated and just like not intellectually able to kind of engage, you know, with, and I just was like, I just couldn't believe it. It was classism and racism, less racism because I'm black. So, you know, like, that's not like, but if I were white, I wonder what the conversations would have been, you know, about that. I don't think I would live in another neighborhood in Louisville, just because I, you know, sort of grew a kind of, what's the word? Like a sort of acrimony or like a disdain for, you know, just the way that the rest of the city has treated the West End. Yeah, there are things that are difficult about living down here, but I don't think I'd want to live. I mean, maybe other parts of the city that are more like the West End. It can be frustrating living here, you know, in some ways, sometimes. But, you know, I like it. You know, they're good people. And I just can't see joining the other team. You know what I mean? Like, even if I didn't like it here, I don't think I could join the other team. You know, I just, it's crazy.
Well, you've liked it well enough to buy two other properties.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's a whole other thing. That just seemed like a, you know, sort of wise-ish thing to do. The property next door, I got exceptionally cheaply. So, I mean, I bought the house next door for, I guess, I don't know if I, is this going to be like widely?
Oh, it's going to be at U of L. It's going to be
just like archived or. Yeah. Okay. So it's not like you're not making a film tomorrow.
No.
I just don't know how, like, you know, names and numbers, but I bought the house next door. I'll just say for $10,000 at auction. And I ended up gutting it and, you know, redoing the whole thing. It still needs work. I mean, that's another thing that happened actually when I moved down here, trying to hire contractors. I can think of just three right off the top of my head, but there are more, but three who I can think of just right now who, you know, I talked to about doing work and we had conversation and then they said, where, you know, okay, where is it? And then I told them where, and they, you know, asked like, well, can you like clarify where that is? And then they just said, I don't work in the West End. Like I won't work in the West End. And at that time it was, you know, people didn't mind telling you why, you know what I mean? Like they'll probably give you a, you know, some kind of like shuck and jive or something. But at that time they're like, oh yeah, I don't work down there because, you know, they're going to steal my stuff and I'm going to get shot and, you know, whatever. But I bought that property for not a lot of money. And then I was kind of a victim of, I consider myself fortunate. So I don't feel like, you know, the whole gentrification thing, I think is an interesting and nuanced conversation, but like the house behind me, I had some, you know, neighbors who I was like pretty close with that lived there, but they rented it. And then they moved out and I tried to contact the owner about possibly buying it. And he would never get back to me. And he rented it to these people and it was a disaster. I mean, I talked to several people about calling Child Protective Services on these people. It was terrible. I mean, there were drugs involved, but there were kids in the house and there was like all this stuff happening. And I didn't call CPS because basically someone who's in that field told me, they're like, yeah, If you do, they're going to take the kids away from their family. That's going to happen. And I just was like, I don't know, like this is like, that's a tough call. But they ended up moving out, and actually the people that live there ended up dying. And I tried to contact the owner again, no response. And then before I knew it, he sold it to these guys who were like, I don't know, sort of developers on their, whatever they are. They're flipping houses and stuff. Two guys from like the Highlands and whatever. And it's interesting because I ended up paying, well, more than I did for the house next door for that house, but it's much smaller and worse shape. And it was interesting because those guys didn't do anything with the house. They just had it for like some amount of time. And I told him at one point, I was like, oh, you guys bought this. They were like, yeah. And I was like, well, I was trying to buy it. Please let me know if you ever do sell it. And so after about a year, the city was just on him. This is the other thing. If you buy property down here, you own property down here, the city, it's just a blitzkrieg of, they'll just come after you with violation after. I could tell you so many stories about West End housing, like discrimination and stuff. And the problem is that they know that, you know, the wealthy people that own property down here, they'll just rack up the fines. They won't pay them. They don't care. They'll sell the property or they'll burn it down, get the whatever. In the end, it'll be fine. But for most people down here that have, you know, managed to get a property, they can't afford to not pay the fines, right? Because it's like, well, those $50 fines turn into a $1,000 citation and a court visit, right? And then before you know it, you've racked up all this. And they know that they can kind of target these people. So we see the building inspector all the time. We never see the police, you know? But anyway, these guys sat on it for a while. The city kind of hectored them for about a year. And I think they just decided it wasn't worth it. And then they sold it to me for like almost twice what they paid, you know? And I'm like, this sucks. I've been living here for like 12 years. I've been trying to buy this low value property. And then these two guys, they happen to be white, who are like young guys that have some money and are flipping houses. They come in, they buy it from, you know, this other guy who happens to be white. And a lot of people down here think, whether or not it's true, but they feel like white property owners are not as inclined to sell property to black buyers. You know, and this did definitely happen to me. I can't say that that's why it happened, and I'm not sure that it is, but you know, but exactly what happened to me is like, oh, I'm trying to buy this property, you know, nothing. These two guys come out of nowhere, buy this property, do nothing with it, and then essentially double their money, you know, from me, who's a resident since, you know, 2005. You know, and so I end up, you know, being a victim of this whole thing that we're talking about without any payoff. It's not like they fixed it up and I paid more. It's not like because these people are buying property, they're, you know, all of a sudden there's a shoe store around the corner that I can go to. It's just, you know, price is going up, but nobody's getting any benefit. And people who live down here are getting priced out and they're not even reaping the benefits of being priced out of their own neighborhood. So, yeah, crazy. Anyway, I could ramble for a long time.
This has been very informative for me.
So. Well, I could try to dig up some more specifics. I'm looking at the records I kept, and they might not be as thorough as I thought they were. But I mean, somewhere I have a cassette tape of a voicemail that one of these banks left me where they said a bunch of illegal stuff. And actually, I just opened right before our call from one of the banks that I didn't really get into a long story with today. I didn't even open the letter of them calling off the closing. Because I had already gotten a phone call, and you know, it sort of, I realized that most of these sort of cancellations ended up being mostly phone calls, right? Where all the paperwork's gone, but then they call you and they're like, we're not doing it. Like, we're backing out. But I read this letter from this bank, and it said, let me just grab it. A couple of the banks, you know, I didn't get all the way to closing with all of them. This particular one, I don't think I went all the way up to closing, but It's a two-line letter, one sentence, or two sentences. It says, we have given your requests, basically for the loan, careful consideration and regret that we are unable to extend credit to you at this time for the following reasons. Then there's a space, and it says, deficiencies in collateral based on appraisal report. So, but the appraisal came back at the sale price. You know what I mean? So anyway, and the comps nearby. So it's interesting because I look at that and I'm like, well, I mean, what would happen if, you know, I was older and smarter at the time and had more time? That seems like, I don't know, that's not congruent with how, you know, with the practice of applying for a loan. So it's not like I got a super low appraisal on the property. The appraisal was in line with the sale, the asking price. So anyway, very interesting. But yeah. And it also says based on the appraisal report. So I'm like, what does that mean? Deficiencies in collateral based on the appraisal report. I mean, I think that means it's in a neighborhood where we're not going to make much money or any money if you default on the loan, which was a very small loan to begin with. So I don't know. Anyway, such is life in the tropics.
All right. Well, thank you for talking to me today.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me go on and on. yeah.